Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Our returning champion today, Dr. Doug Pugh, is well known in two different worlds. The world of high-powered copywriters for online courses, where he's done many six- and seven-figure launches. And the other world where Doug is known is that of music. He's a composer whose work was actually performed at Carnegie Hall. And he wrote an opera that was performed at the Kennedy Center. These worlds overlap in certain ways sometimes for Doug, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Doug's written copy for music businesses like Creative Piano Academy, Lauren Bateman Guitar, Become a Bassist, and J209, an a cappella singing group. He helped grow their Instagram following to over 15,000 in a couple of months. Most of his work for these businesses has been to create sales, and as you might expect, selling students into an online music instruction business, online music lessons, is different in some ways than other types of copywriting. Yet the differences are fascinating, and they may help you with your own copy, even in non-musical niches. Just like this will help copywriters in all niches. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. Doug, welcome back. You know, this is your sixth time back, returning champion.
Oh, thank you. I didn't realize it was six. Wow. I feel honored. Thank you.
Yeah. Very pleased to have you here. Everyone has some fear before they take a course, right? We all have, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. Even if you're excited about learning things like I usually am, there's a little amount of anxiety. But you mentioned something specific you've seen with music courses. What kind of fears do prospective music students deal with that you don't see in other niches?
Yeah, one of the biggies has to do with stage fright and embarrassment. You may get this also if you're selling a speaking course or something. You know, there's the funny saying, what are people more afraid of than death? Public speaking, right? And it's very similar with music. I mean, whether you're a little bit older, maybe retired, and just want to play around the campfire, or maybe just play the piano at home, at a certain point, it goes from playing for yourself to other people are going to hear me, or other mm-hmm. people are going to see me. And that's a big increase, different kind of fear. You know, I've taken courses in like QuickBooks or in, you know, some other things that are super helpful because I have fears about getting my bookkeeping wrong. But that's a very different fear than I just played the wrong chord and sang the wrong lyrics in front of people on stage. Ah, you know, it's a different kind of fear.
It's social embarrassment you're talking about, right?
For sure. Yeah, it's kind of like the John Caples ad, which, you know, he started with that idea of possible social embarrassment. They laughed when I sat at the piano, but when I started to play, it's a different kind of embarrassment.
Okay, so I guess what I'm hearing is you can't use the typical copywriting techniques that you might use, oh, say, selling a QuickBooks course, or I don't know, maybe even selling another marketing product that you would use here, because that social embarrassment is much more intense and three-dimensional. So did you develop new copywriting techniques to help prospects get past those fears and go ahead and enroll in courses?
Yeah, it's not sure they're 100% new, but it's kind of leaning into certain things more than others. So for example, I tend to use less hardcore tone in the copy. Instead, more encouraging, enabling kind of copy. You know, just earlier this week, I was reviewing one of John Carlton's awesome guitar shredder ads. I love reading these. They're so fun. And for guys like you and me who have a bunch of guitars and dream of ourselves as amazing players, you know, those are fantastic ads to people like us. To the majority of people out there, and there's a huge market of hobbyist musicians who, you know, just want to have a little fun. I've found that the kind of tone in those ads actually can scare some of them away. So it's not that you shouldn't tap into their fears the way John does, but it's doing it sort of around beating around the bush a little bit. And instead of, you know, hardcore, encourage them and say, you know, all you need is really two notes to play this chord. You don't need all your fingers on the guitar. If you can just get these two notes down, then you can play this beautiful chord. And then inside of that, there's this fear that goes away. Like, oh, I won't mess up the chord. Or if you just make this one shift, your chord changes will become smoother and people won't hear a break between the chords. That inadvertently calms a fear. But it does it in an encouraging, enabling way where they can see, oh, maybe I can do this and not be as nervous.
You're coming at this after decades of being a musician, being a music student, and being a teacher.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you see it across the board. I mean, I've been in high classical music situations a lot, but I've also been in rock bands and jazz bands, and it's very similar in each of those situations. I've had conductors or teachers who are like, you get those notes right or you're out. And I've had other teachers and conductors who are like, yeah, that's almost there. One more little bit of this and you'll have it. Boy, that just like changes the circumstances completely, the encouraging leader versus the castigating leader. And you can approach your copy very much in the same way.
Yeah. So when we were preparing for this, you mentioned the art of possibility route. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's very similar to what we were just mentioning, but you know, in a lot of markets, and rightfully so, maybe biz op or finance or health, it's very smart to lean hard on fears and really maybe even doom and gloom. That really gets our, you know, gets our attention in those markets. But here in these more hobby kind of markets, this idea of possibility has worked better for me. And what I mean by that is, you know, can I help Latricia picture herself in a way she's comfortable with, like at church, singing a piece and having the congregation, their eyes fill with tears, not because she sang poorly, but because they, you know, they felt something or whatever. Like helping them see possibilities that they never considered before. I'll even select testimonials and case studies that specifically do that, where instead of just, oh, I had a great experience learning from Doug's course or whatever. No, I did something I never even thought I could ever do. And now people are, you know, XYZ, whatever the thing is, but it's like opening up their eyes to possibilities they never dreamed could work for them. It's a sort of a gentler way, instead of, you know, petting your cat backwards, you're petting it the right way.
Yeah. So you say, instead of twisting the knife, you show them lots of ways they can overcome those fears. How do you come up with all those different ways? What is that all about?
Well, you know, it's very much from two things. Number one, my own experience, sitting and thinking, you know, what was I nervous about when I was 14 and learning to play the guitar? You know, it's like, well, why did I want to play the guitar? Well, there were a lot of cute girls around, and they seemed to like the guys who played the guitar, right? So it's like,
yeah, that sounds familiar.
If I get this right, maybe, you know, she'll want to hold my hand or something. And so there's that personal experience of remembering the worry that a chord change isn't going to happen fast enough and I'm going to look like a fool. So I really have walked a mile, many miles, in the musician's shoes. But then on the other side, I do kind of have the curse of knowledge because I've been in music so long and I've been a professor and all those things. So I interview these people and really try to come at it from their point of view without assuming that I know what they're feeling, and really, you know, ask questions that they can give me situations where, my arthritis made this happen, or my whatever. You know, there's a bunch of ways that through interviewing these different ideas come up. So I sort of collect those from both sides. And then as I'm describing these possibilities, I weave in these different things like, oh, Jane had the arthritis in her thumb and couldn't make the shift on the guitar. But when she learned this thing, she didn't have to worry about that shift anymore. She could play it in the same position and not have to worry. So the picking out those little tiny things that call back to the, you won't need to be embarrassed because this is actually easier than you think. It's all kind of connected. Art of possibility, the little details, but in a soothing kind of a way that they feel empowered.
That sounds really good. What about demonstration? You said there are two different kinds of demonstration that you use instead of just testimonials and case studies.
Yeah, definitely. We all know the famous Claude Hopkins quote that the most powerful form of proof is demonstration. It's very true. And in courses like this, it can be really hard to give people a test drive, so to speak. But, you know, we the thing we tend to lean on are stories and case studies and testimonies. Those are great. But there's a second kind of proof that I have found even more effective, and that is having them test something out for themselves in the copy itself. So, for example, one of my music courses, right on the sales page, I give them a little tip about how to use a couple of chords, and I say, go over to your piano, play this hymn that you're familiar with, Amazing Grace or whatever, and then on this word, add this additional note in the right hand and see how it changes things. And that they can stand up and walk over to their piano and test it for themselves. That goes a long way. It gives them a little peek into, again, possibility. So I tend to work hard to find a way to do that with my clients so they can test it out.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're giving them, how do I put this, a test that requires minimal effort and action that gives maximum wow factor, maximum surprise, maximum awesome, feeling, right?
Yeah, which is kind of the magic of a lot of these music courses that I've worked with. You know, nothing is perfectly easy. We all wish we had a magic pill and could wake up being Van Halen. I would love that. But, you know, it's hard work no matter what you do. But if you can get it down, a tip or an instruction down to, like you said, one little thing that can yield a lot of possibility, that's so great because their belief goes up. And that's the thing with this. If I can give them one little tip, they go over to their guitar and they try this, their belief just notched up. And if I can get their belief to notch up even before they've purchased, that's fantastic. And it gives them the hope that, wow, I'm starting to believe myself while I'm reading the copy, what's it going to be like once I'm in the course? Gives them hope.
Okay. So you talk about a shoulder-to-shoulder email approach, too. Never heard that before. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, our inboxes are so full, and so many emails are just transactional, especially this time of year. You know, this time of this recording, it's right before Black Friday. And get my offer, buy my thing. Okay, I know we kind of have to do that. We're businesses. We need to put ourselves out there. But it's not very friendly. It's not very helpful or empowering. So in these kind of niches where I'm working with mostly hobbyists and they're there to enjoy themselves and have fun, I like to imagine myself as I'm writing an email, like I've come over to Margie's home and I got my guitar out and she's got her guitar out and we're just playing and we're enjoying ourselves and having a conversation and say, oh, hey, Margie, I love what you did there. You know what? If you just add your pinky to that fret right next to where you are, you're going to get this additional sound. You're going to love it. Just try it, you know? And so it becomes this sort of camaraderie feel and relationship building. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't sell in every email. Of course, I think you should sell in every email. But if you lead with this kind of shoulder-to-shoulder friendship, relationship kind of thing and give them a win or a belief, then at the end of the email, all you have to do is mention, if you want some more of this, this might be perfect for you. Come check it out. You don't have to hard sell. This works really well in these kinds of hobby niches.
Yeah, especially since, like you mentioned before, people are so nervous about it to begin with. You know, not everybody and not in every situation, but ultimately where it's leading is in front of other people, and that is where they get nervous.
Yeah, and that's really the bigger market. You know, there are courses for specialists. You know, like you have a lot of experience taking different courses, and so I'm sure there's a type of course that is more directed towards you who has done a bunch of stuff, but you've just narrowed the market down to fewer people. There is a big market of people who are excited about music. They're on YouTube. They're wishing they knew. And so having this kind of shoulder-to-shoulder approach appeals to that bigger market.
Okay, so let's talk about offer creation, because I got the sense talking to you that, well, you've done courses, right? I mean, you've done, you know, 6- and 7-figure promotions outside of the music business. So you know about creating offers, but I have a feeling that you do something different with offers in music courses and music lessons and music programs.
Yeah, one of the things that maybe is a little bit unique about me, I'm not sure, but is that I don't just write for music businesses, but I run my own music business. So I'm selling my own courses and programs. So it's a fun testing ground to see what techniques are working, and then I can take those to my clients. But when I'm creating an offer, there's a couple things I really like to think about. One of them is having some kind of hybrid experience. Now, we've been seeing this more and more with other types of courses, but it's very applicable in music. What I mean by hybrid is it's not just turn on the how-to video and I'm done. It's a combination of, okay, there's pre-recorded content about, you know, whatever the thing is, but then there's a feedback element. There's a group element where we meet once a week and discuss what you just worked on, almost like open office hours. So in my flagship course, which is a course to teach people to write church songs for children, I've got a whole bunch of pre-recorded content. It's divided into 4 sections. First, we write our lyrics, then we write our melodies, then we write our chords, and then we write the piano part, and then we're done. It's over 8 weeks. Well, they all watch the content for the first 2 weeks themselves, and there's an assignment or two, and then they come to the live call, and we work on it together. So we get a chance to like be there with them and help them apply what they've learned. There's a lot of ways to do that. You can do it yourself as the course creator. You can have a coach on your team. But giving them that extra feedback experience is really great. And it's not often the first thing we think of in info businesses. You know, oh, I'll just pile more info on them. Yeah, we're so used to that now. It's becoming like, are they even going to finish it? I have never once in 5 years had a student not finish or complete a song in this flagship course of mine. And I think it's because of the hybrid experience.
So that's interesting. And yeah, you're probably right. It is. What this reminds me, not exactly point by point, but in general is more like an apprenticeship model where you have some study and then you show up in the workshop and you need to actually perform the actions that you studied. And, you know, depending on the mood and the personality of the mentor, either be harshly criticized or be supported in getting better at it. And that's not exactly what you're doing, but it seems closer to that than the typical online, you know, data dump model that a lot of people use.
There's a lot of similarity there. Yeah, I do have some offers that are one-on-one, more of a mentor experience like that. But this flagship one, you know, there's another element to what you were just saying that I found really, it was surprising. I didn't realize this was going to happen. When I started this hybrid model, in the live gatherings, I take one person at a time and I'll spend, you know, 5 minutes looking at their melody here and 5 minutes. And I thought to myself, oh, the other people in the room are going to be bored because I'm not working on their assignment. That was completely the opposite. Everybody was glued because they were learning from me working on other people's stuff. And so that is a really great additional element of the hybrid thing. On top of that, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, Russell Brunson always would say, if you do a webinar every week and you change it and make it better each time and do the feedback loop, you're going to be doing great because you're continually reiterating. This kind of takes that to the next step, because not only am I learning what's engaging the students, but they're telling me, because they're watching me work on other people's stuff, and they'll stop and say, I've never heard that. What did you mean by that? And they learn this other stuff that I just do because I'm a composer. I don't often think about it. But that's a nice benefit of this hybrid model. Works well.
So that's one thing. There's another thing you talk about where you create a video of yourself, or you create a video of the instructor. Like maybe you could talk about Joe Sikora and his piano courses, where they're doing the thing that they're teaching.
Yeah.
So that the students can see that thing being done in action rather than just being taught. They actually see a demonstration.
Absolutely. So, with Joe's course, Joe's a client of mine that runs piano, Creative Piano Academy. He has this wonderful course called Sit and Play. You don't have to read music. Just with these patterns, you can learn to play, come up with beautiful music. Well, he'll teach you a short little video lesson about, okay, with these three notes in the right hand and this one note in the left hand, try this pattern and you're going to be able to make up some beautiful music. And then in the next video, there's always a second video with each little lesson, and it's called a play-along video, where Joe sits at the piano and he demonstrates what he just taught. And then he says, okay, now I'm going to basically provide a backing track for you to play it with me. And he has this cool little widget where you can slow the tempo down, play it as slow as you need to, or speed it up. And it's like you're practicing with your teacher, but he's in the UK and I'm in Utah. It's like, it's so cool. It gives you this experience of sitting together. It's kind of like the shoulder-to-shoulder email idea, but in the learning process too. In my songwriting classes, I do the same thing where I'll teach them, okay, this is how we're going to harmonize the melody. Here's the assignment. I've given you all the instruction. You have the tools to finish this now. And then I'll make a separate video where I pull up the exercise and I complete the homework myself live on the screen, like with my iPad. And I'll talk about, oh, this is why I chose this note here, because of this and because of this. And that adds a whole other element to their learning experience, where again, it's like sitting with me and having me talk them through as they learn.
Yeah. In the time we've got remaining, I'd like to cover a couple things. First, if you could just give us a couple minutes on what you do differently in music education memberships, different from other niches.
The number one reason people churn out of memberships or cancel is because of content overwhelm. And that's true in every single market. In music, it seems to be even more true because, again, I think it's this kind of stage fright thing. Like, that's too much for me to handle. I just need one thing at a time or I'm not going to get this. So I like to have little milestones in my membership where, okay, it's November 2025. This month, we're going to get one thing and I'm going to teach you about it and then I'm going to create a little challenge for you. So your goal is that by the end of the month, you have completed this little challenge, and this is so helpful for them because it feels like a stepping stone. I made a little bit of progress. They already know that music is a long time pursuit, but if they can't see themselves progressing on a regular basis, it's like, why am I paying for this? I'm not getting anywhere. So if you really chunk it down, and just give them one thing that they can legitimately do, that works really well in membership and music.
And then after a few weeks or a few months, they've actually accomplished one of the things, but they've done it one tiny little piece at a time, right?
Right, yeah. And eventually they're like, look what I've done. One of my students recently had one of her songs picked up by a church magazine and published, and she was like, I never even thought I could do it, but it was like little piece by little piece because she had these milestones until, wow, big result.
Yeah, and I guess if you practice with the milestones, eventually, by habit, you sort of combine them and speed up and you start getting done faster, but it's not nearly as intimidating in the beginning. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the power of breaking things into small consecutive pieces is a skill in and of itself.
And it's hard to do. It takes time, but it's worth taking that time as you're creating the offer, because you will get better results.
For sure. And how do you offer stack? How do you provide a series of offers different than you would in other niches?
Yeah, a lot of niches have many offers. In my experience, a lot of these companies that offer many things, they don't seem to have much connection to each other other than a general connection. The more you can stack your offers in a way that feels, again, like I'm actually progressing and seeing myself take steps forward, the better. So one example, and this is not always possible in every music business, but something that I do is I'll say, okay, you're coming into my world for the first time. You need a basic chords class. Like, let's just learn our chords, you know? And it's like times tables. You just got to know that this is the times table. All right, they learn that, and then say, well, what's next? Okay, well, now we're going to take what we just did there, and we're going to use it in the creative process and write a song with it. Whoa. At first, they're like, what? You know, but it's like, you have knowledge. Now let's make it applied knowledge. And then they have this result of like, whoa. So it's like sharpening the saw and then actually cutting down the tree and then coming back and sharpening again with a little more and then going back to the creative. So I have them on this sort of ping pong path of learn a bit, put it into practice with creativity, come back, learn the next thing, go back. And that has worked really well with my students.
Yeah, and I guess people like, because they feel smarter, but they don't feel overwhelmed by theory and detail, because they're seeing some results, and there's a certain amount of transformation and growth and pride and all of that, right? Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, wow, this is a wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate it. People, go ahead, Nathan. Yeah.
Before we're out of here, I just, while I was listening to this, I was trying to brainstorm on other industries that this type of approach would work for. I was thinking like a stage magician that wanted to learn sleight of hand tricks would really benefit from marketing their offer or their online course with this. If it's not too much to ask, who do you think this would apply to other than just music courses?
Yeah, it's a great idea. Great question. I mean, the first thing that I thought of was copywriters. I mean, in fact, David will do this in our mentoring sessions. I've been mentoring with David for something like 2.5 years, I think. And, you know, at first we were really like, okay, we need to learn these things and then go read an ad and find the things in the ad and then come back and do some more and then go find. That was so helpful because I'm seeing this little step-by-step progression. So I think any kind of skill building, you can apply some of this. And it's not going to be the same in every niche, of course, but maybe it's full of filmmaking. You know, okay, if I wanted to become a filmmaker, I don't know which camera to pick. It feels so overwhelming. And, you know, but all right, we're going to learn this one like aspect ratio thing. I'm just making this up. I don't even know what I'm talking about. And then go try it, right? Like, you can do that there. I think you can really apply this to many different how to learn a skill niche. That's where I think it can work.
I like that. I also wanted to bring a focus to the group membership aspect of it. David and I were involved with the AI copywriting mastermind a while back, and one of the great things about it is we had weekly calls and we had hot seats where people could bring in their project. And a lot of times looking at somebody else's project from the outside view would help me understand things about stuff that I was working on in a way that I hadn't even thought about it before, that I wouldn't have gotten if I was just watching videos or working with somebody one-on-one. Having somebody with a completely different project, a completely different need, and being able to sit there and watch them go through the process unlocked a bunch of things for myself. So a bunch of gold in today's episode. Thank you for coming on and sharing this with us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah. All right. Doug, if people want to get in touch with you, what are the options?
Yeah, you can over to my website, which is Doug, Doug Pugh Copywriting. That's P-E-W. Or you can just email me at Doug@DougPughCopywriting. I'd be happy to .com, and I'd be happy to chat with you.
Yeah, and also, you've got a music business people can check out if they want to see how you do it, right?
Right. It's called Latter Day Musiversity. So just all one long word, LatterDayMusiversity.com, and you can see what I'm up to there.
Sounds great. Thanks again.
And we will make sure to leave links to all of your sites in the show notes over at copywriterspodcast.com. So if you enjoyed this interview, you want to follow up with Doug, the easiest way to do that is head over to copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. And thanks, Doug.
My pleasure.
Are you getting tired of using the hero's journey in your sales copy over and over again? My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get the Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com, so get your copy today.